Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Nick Linder back on the show. Nick is a content creator. You'll find his videos very educational, informational on YouTube, self-named YouTube channel, Nick Linder. And track him down on social media as well. Nick is kind of a fixture in the fishing industry over there in terms of making content. He works with multiple different companies, just producing some great videos. Like I said, educational stuff. This interview is no different. We're going to dig into some great topics and get Nick's take. And it's fun to get caught up with Nick and get a little synopsis of the fishing he's been doing lately. And besides the educational stuff, it's just a lot of fun to talk fishing with Nick. He's definitely brings the good, positive vibes. So let's get into it with Nick Linder on the JMO Podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description to this podcast. Just to kind of kick it off from a fishing standpoint, give me your season so far.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a, it's been a lot for sure. I'd say, so like I started out my open water season running down to the Mississippi a couple times. And I honestly just like haven't spent barely any time down there. And it's just one of those things where I'm like pretty much always driving north to fish if I can. So driving south is like not something I do very often. So I started down in the Mississippi early in the year, and that was like probably March or something. And it's just like the weirdest thing ever, going down there and fishing and then like stripping my electronics off the boat and going ice fishing again for a couple weeks. So I definitely did quite a bit of that in the beginning of the season. I actually didn't really even film a lot of that. I just kind of wanted to go explore and try and learn down there and just spend a little bit of time in the boat. But so yeah, started out there, went back, did some late ice stuff, pan fish and perch and whatever around home. Usually I go up north for, you know, a last ice trip. And yeah, I guess we did do Winnipeg, I guess, at last ice. So but yeah, anyhow, on to open water fishing again. Then I ran to Green Bay, which was pretty interesting. That is just like an absolutely insane fishery. There's so many fish. So I caught, I don't even know. It was, so allegedly the bite out there has been really tough this spring. That's what I had heard. You know, I was listening to some really good podcasts and I had heard a couple guys say that. I was listening to your podcast a few weeks ago and I think Jacob Sweary might have said that, I think.
Yeah.
But then I had heard that from a couple other people too. So I did find the bite to be difficult there. But I did end up catching some fish, and I don't think I caught any fish under like 24 inches. And I caught like, I don't know, maybe 20 fish while I was there. So Green Bay is insane. And that's the first time I've gone and done that spring bite over there. So I was just kind of learning and figuring out what's going on. And I think I'm going to probably go there every year now. A lot of people say, oh man, you should have saw it, you know, but it's still crazy. Honestly, it's like Winnipeg, right? Everybody's like, oh, you should have been there. You know, you should have been there 10 years ago. And it's like, well, Winnipeg's still nuts
Yeah.
for ice fishing, you know, and stuff like that. So,
But like from a fishing standpoint, you know, the conditions are always different. How you catch them is
yeah.
always a thing. I'm sort of curious for you. You're a content creator, but in those times, you know, you're probably a content consumer, you know, watching those guys that are over there. Like I'm curious about all the different elements, how they lived up to the hype, like how you found them and how you caught them and all that. Those kind of a breakdowns too, I think, are really interesting for somebody like you who has a tons of experience, but that was a new thing for you.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, I mean, I would say, first of all, like when the fish are out in the bay, there's just like an incredible amount of basically just enormous sand flats. And it is just wildly easy to run around at a fairly decent speed. That's something, you know, I didn't even tune in super hard, but like I was going 8+ miles an hour. You could probably even get up on plane, honestly, and drive around out there. And if you see anything, it's fish. You know, there's a few spots where there's rocks and there are some things, you know, but like for the most part, it's just a lot of sand and those fish are just kind of roaming around out there. And so it's super easy to see them on side. And then I actually went over and borrowed one of Brett McComas's live scope setups. So I've got my own, right? But I just financially, I haven't been able to pull the trigger on a second one. But to run forward and perspective at the same time out there is, I kind of had an idea of what happens over there as far as just, you know, the giant sand flats and, you know, big schools of fish all over and whatever. So I kind of had an inkling that perspective mode might be insane out there. And it really was. I mean, I feel like just from an efficiency standpoint, and I don't know. I mean, we can get into explaining what perspective mode is, but it's basically like flipping the transducer on its side. So you get like you can see super far, even in shallow water. Yeah, I get it's like side imaging or it's like 360 imaging in front of you in real time or whatever. If you're talking about like Hummingbird 360 or whatever.
Oh yeah, and like, you know, how important it is to sort of realize these opportunities. Like if you're trying to build confidence in something like perspective mode, or you're just trying to build confidence in any portion of
That's
your
the
game,
spot. Yeah.
look at opportunities like this in places that set up like this. I mean, there's no secret. Like you said, it's like you can gather information to sort of figure out like, well, where's probably the best practice grounds for me to go to
Yeah.
get better at perspective mode, or get a better understanding and build confidence perspective mode. It's like, holy cow, like Green Bay
Yeah.
in the spring. Like, I think that's worth pointing out too, 'cause like
Yeah.
somebody it's kind of, I feel like it's worth pointing out like those types
Yeah.
of
I'll give you
elements to
some
this.
examples. So if you wanted like the perspective mode mecca, I mean Green Bay, right? If you want to like, okay, so you know, there might be people from New York or wherever listening to this, but if you're here in the Midwest, like if you want to gain confidence in throwing swim baits for walleyes, I mean Rainy Lake, Lake of the Woods, you know, those two fisheries are just super good. Places for catching walleyes on swim bait. If you want to like get into using rattle baits, I mean Green Bay is a spot for that in open
Yes.
water.
And the hair
And
jig deal.
yeah, and the hair jig deal too, for sure. Like if you want to get confidence in that, like they bite that. Like everybody out there has a black and purple hair jig tied on and other assorted colors. But yeah, like rattle baits in the winter. So here's the thing. I mean, we've been on some really cool bites catching walleyes on rattle baits in the winter on Mille Lacs, you know, or Red Lake or all these different places, you know, even pluck a couple on some of the smaller stocked walleye lakes. But like you want to get confidence, like go to Lake Winnipeg, you
Yeah,
know?
exactly.
And I honestly, actually, if you just went on, just committed to it on Upper Red Lake as well, you know, you would catch, and honestly, you would do the same on Devil's Lake, you know, whatever. But like, there's definitely like these places where it's super, super conducive, and you think to yourself, well, that just like I went to Winnipeg, and it's like, okay, well, man, these guys aren't even using like the super sneaky finesse stuff, so you think you're gonna have some sort of advantage or something, and like. But then it's like, oh no, like they just really want big giant baits. Like that's why they use 6-inch spoons and like rattle baits and stuff. So like these fish are just built different in these different places. But yeah, it's a great place to go and get confidence. Any of those, you know, any of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. So you pulled out of Green Bay feeling juicy. You got some major, merit badges with your perspective mode, you know, anything else on that or where'd you go next?
Yeah, no, that's an awesome way to put it too. I love merit badges. But yeah, I mean, I guess just, yeah, while I was at Green Bay though, like it was just so neat having perspective to be casting at a fish, and then be like, oh, there's one to the left of me right now too. Like I should flip over there. You know, it's just, you just, instead of having to scan around and look at, you just look down at perspective and you're like, oh, there's a two pack, you know, to my right. So that was really, really neat. I also should say too, and I'm not an expert at perspective, you know, I'm just playing with it at this point. But I think if I had two transducers, I might be an expert by now, 'cause I think it's so fun to play with. But, one thing I noticed out in those flats is there'd be some fish that were real tight, you know, like just like little bumps. And if you were, it's like, it's such big water. If you're not cruising, you're just wasting time. You know, if you're just sneaking your way around, you really got to go quickly and cover water. Cause the fish are kind of schooled up in areas, but I guess long story short, like there's a lot of fish you would have missed because they're so tight to bottom and it just kind of looks like a little bump, but for whatever reason, they just stick out like sore thumbs on perspective mode. So it's kind of like, it's really similar to side imaging in a lot of ways, you know, where it's like, you might not have seen that fish on 2D if you're driving over it, but they just, you know, stick out like sore thumbs. You can see the white, it looks just like side imaging in a lot of ways. You can see kind of the white grain and then the black shadow behind it. So, but yeah, going from Green Bay, then I went home for a little bit, chased some crappies, panfish, all that. And then I did sneak over to Hayward for a little bit. And I never have really done the Wisconsin walleye opener ever. I've just kind of stayed around home and fished for crappies. And like, if anything, I've gone west, you know, South Dakota, smaller North Dakota lakes, just kind of stuff close to Minnesota there. And that is obviously, that can be really great. But I did go out for the Wisconsin opener and I fished in a few of the lakes over in the Hayward area. So that was kind of neat exploring that area. I guess what I didn't expect going over there was the fact that all those lakes are super, super clear. They're like, just like home. Honestly, like if you look at the Brainerd area, we have a lot of really clear bodies of water, you know, there's structure, there's weeds. And Hayward is kind of similar, except for just maybe the fact that outside of Le Couderay, you know, a lot of the lakes are actually pretty small. You know, I thought it would be bigger. I thought it would be a little busier over there, but I think during opening weekend it was busy, but the rest of the week it was pretty quiet and it was pretty cool to just experiment and explore and kind of see how the fish set up in those spots. A lot of those lakes over there have really good rocks. But I don't know that any walleyes use those really that I could see. Like the walleyes were super heavily, focused on weeds. They were in the weeds and, the smallmouth or the rocks, like there were smallmouth using the rocks. So it was almost like kind of segregated in that way where the smallmouth kept pretty heavy on the rocks that I saw this spring anyway. And the weeds, you know, I had a lot of the walleyes. So, yeah. And then after that, it's Minnesota opener. So I spent some time on Mille Lacs. And then since then I've just been, yeah, just like running around all over the place. Like having fished the same, like twice, you know, more than once, you know? So,
you know, on that Wisconsin deal, I've got very limited experience over there, but you know, you're talking about that clear water. It's like not all those lakes over there are clear because of zebra mussels. There's a lot of water over there that's been historically super clear. If I'm correct on that. And I feel like those fish are like generational clear water kind of hard to get the boat right on top of kind of creatures.
Yeah. You know what? It does seem there's just a lot of similarities to home. I mean, the fish around here are super, super skittish, you know, unless they're in a somewhat reasonable mood. And over there was almost kind of similar where the water is super clear. It probably didn't help that I showed up on, you know, a couple days where it was just basically flat calm. So that does make it a little tricky, especially when the fish are up a little shallower in the weeds. But yeah, I mean, it's cool over there. Like I caught fish and yeah, I don't really know about a lot of the ecology of it. You know, I just kind of did a little digging and kind of sort of tried to figure out, you know, a few interesting lakes, you know, looking at data and also just chatting with some people. But yeah, no, it's interesting. It's really clear water and there's some deep structure too, where it's like, I just know they're going to be suspending out on that type of stuff as well. But yeah, I mean, kind of in that video, I was talking about just how June is such a good month to explore new lakes because the fish are still pretty bitey, you know, mm-hmm. And I've kind of found for the most part, you know, fish, the walleyes are going to bite through the summer. Like, obviously it can get quite a bit tougher, but June is, you know, the bite is just so good in June that like trying new lakes, you know, trying new areas of fisheries and stuff like is nice in June, but it's kind of interesting too. Like, I don't know when you're putting this podcast out, but like July is kind of another one where I think it's like a super, super good month. So in a lot of cases, the bite is still pretty good in July. You know, as we get more into like the midsummer, like things can be a little bit tougher. But one advantage that July has over June is just the fact that the walleyes are definitely in a little bit more predictable locations. Like June is a little bit of a transition month. And if you love, you know, chasing the transition, I mean, that can be really fun, you know, to do, especially on new lakes. But, as far as like, hey, I've never been to this lake before, let's break it down. Or if I'm going to, you know, a town where there's a few lakes and I want to hit maybe two lakes each day or whatever, they're just in more predictable spots in July. So that does make that a little bit easier and kind of enticing. And honestly, the water temperatures are so cold right now still. The fish are still super, super snappy around home and probably around the region. So
on that clear water topic, what's like your top two recommendations if you do run into the fish like in super clear water? Like if that's like the only constant in my question here is like the super clear water. Everything else can be whatever variable you think is interesting. But like other than just not driving the boat over them or getting too close, because that's kind of that's kind of something that I say too often. But if I excluded that tip, what are some other, maybe some gear choices, you know, I guess I'm just sort of fantasizing like smaller line or longer leaders or whatever. Like, what are like you feel like other than getting the boat too close when you're in gin clear water situations, what are one or two or three things, adjustments that you've made to your strategy in that scenario that you feel like matter quite a bit?
Yeah. Well, that's like pretty much all we do around home, you know. These lakes are not only are they super clear, but I was shooting a video earlier today. We were doing like a little, me and TJ were doing a little challenge, TJ Erickson. And I just like, I was like annoying myself because I kept on saying like, oh man, you know, here's a couple more boats. It's so many of these lakes, not only are they super clear, but they're just really pressured. I mean, there's just always a lot of boats, even on a, you know, Tuesday morning, Thursday morning, whatever. So yeah, I kind of live it to some degree, you know? So on some of these fisheries, I guess one thing that I do all the time, unless it's like a plastic or something, is I will use super light line, like 6 pound fluorocarbon. And the leader will be just obnoxiously long,
mm-hmm.
Like 10 plus feet. Usually I would say I don't know, somewhat critical. I would say, I think, I think if you've got like a 2 foot leader, I think one thing people think is like, well, I got a leader, you know, but if it's like 2 feet or something, I mean, these fish can, if you're casting at a fish that's 20 feet down, I mean, they can, a lot of times they know the bait is there when it's, you know, three feet from the surface, you know? So they're just like, they're hyper aware of their conditions, their surroundings. And yeah, so like light line is critical and a really long leader is critical. I don't know that that's anything game breaking or, you know, I'm not breaking any red hot news here, but yeah, like a couple other things we'll do is like just really, really downsizing weights, you know? So if we're that's really critical. A lot of times when it's clear and the fish are a little bit finicky, getting close to them is obviously super not good. But having your bait just falling too quickly can be a pretty big negative. So if I'm using like a jig and a night crawler, you know, I'll use like an 1/8 ounce jig or even sometimes a 1/16 ounce jig, just to drop that thing a little bit slower. If I'm drop shotting, I mean, I've downsized to an 1/8 ounce weight drop shotting as long as the fish aren't moving around a lot. Yeah. I mean, bobbers and stuff, obviously. Super, super weightless presentation. But another thing I'll do too is I'll take some of my baits and like I will hold, like instead of letting them free fall, I'll kind of like keep pressure and pendulum the baits to the bottom. And that just drops that just decreases the drop speed by like 50%, you know? And a lot of times I've found too, like, so obviously I'm using like a lot of forward facing sonar. A lot of these lakes, especially around home, it can be very, very tough if you're not casting at fish. But a lot of times, like, you want to work the fish upwards a lot of times with jigs and stuff like that. But sometimes just like working them up and seeing that they're not quite committing and just kind of letting that bait pendulum, a lot of times they'll pick it up on the fall. And if you just kind of free-falled it, I don't know what the right grammar of
that
is.
Yeah, we get it. We get it.
If you let it free fall, they're just not going to chase fast enough and they're not going to go down and get it. But if you just slowly kind of let it loop down and pendulum, they'll sort of grab it. Almost even on the turn too, where you let it fall, you're holding onto the line, it's going down and then it's almost starting to flatten up and you're going to start working it up again. Right as it's kind of flattening down on the kind of the bottom of that trough, the bottom of that upside down rainbow or whatever you want to call it. Hard to describe, I guess, via podcast, but yeah, slowing down that drop speed is huge too. So I don't know I feel like at this point I'm rambling.
I love getting you to ramble about it. Honestly, I think it's awesome to sort of get it like expressed because I feel like, and maybe I'm like, maybe this is like an overreaction. Maybe this is like a hot take that's, you know, not real. But I always kind of rely on, you know, the Minnesota anglers, you know, or the content that comes out of that, you know, the part of the Midwest, like where you're at, for example, but like where all that clear water is, you know, I kind of rely on getting some of those tips and tricks of that clear water out of there. Because like out here in the Dakotas, we get clear water. Like right now, Devil's Lake is kind of unusually clear or unseasonably clear just because we've had a lot of cold weather. It seems like we didn't have the runoff. Sakakawea is clear. Like we can have clear water too, or, you know, we can have plenty of visibility where it gets, where we're running into some of these situations. But, you know, generally speaking, we're not always that, you know, if the wind blows or if we get a bunch of runoff, like, you know, we're kind of blessed with stained water typically, but we can run into clear water too. And then it's kind of like if we're not prepared for it, like, you know, so anyways, I take a lot away from that content that you make and all those things, but it's almost like you guys have been filming and are just sort of fishing in that super clear water for so long. You probably just don't like repeating yourselves every single video for 14, 15 times, but it's almost like I need a little bit of an update on the clear water situation. Like I need you to remind me that you have a super long leader. You know, like as a consumer that I am, it's like, you guys are probably doing it that a lot of those things have become old hat where 5 years ago it was, you know, a pretty big deal, kind of groundbreaking and, you know, consumed pretty heavily. And maybe you guys have gotten to the point now where it's like, you know, just repeating those things are maybe lost their luster. But man, I like the sort of the revamp on that because, like we're out here in the Dakotas, like, man, we got a ton of visibility just with, you know, not a ton of snow runoff and a lot of our small lakes and everything. And so, you know, for us, if we have 5 foot visibility, and there's more than that in a lot of places, but like if there's 5 or 6 foot visibility, it's unbelievable what that does in comparison to like the, you know, the 18 to 24 inches, you know, with the nice stained water that we love to have, where you can just tie direct, you know, braid to a swim jig and you have all the sensitivity in the world. And, you know, and then it's like all of a sudden you have like a little bit of a cold snap. You don't go fishing for, you know, a few days and then it warms up again and you get back out there and you're not maybe paying attention until halfway through the day. You're struggling. You might be seeing fish on your electronics or whatever. You're struggling to get bit. You blame it on the cold front. But you, if you realize like, oh my gosh, the water just cleared up from like 2 foot visibility to 7 foot visibility in a week. And, you know, and then how, you know, it all just settled out and it's like, my leader is still only 12 inches, you know, and it's like, I've got high vis line on and, you know, it might be a big factor. And then I go and I make a 5, 6, 7 foot leader, a fluorocarbon leader, and I get a little bit more dialed in or tuned into that. And all of a sudden I'm getting some meaningful fish catches.
Honestly, I think at this point, it's not even that it's old hat, you know, it's just that. Or it's not even that it's old hat or just get tired of repeating. It's just like, that's just like kind of what we do. And then you forget that that's interesting. But yeah, a lot of the North Dakota stuff is really interesting too, though, because in a lot of ways you can take some of the things that people in Minnesota are doing and actually just like make it like do a more aggressive version of it, you know, where like a jig and a night crawler is kind of dominating tournaments and stuff over here and kind of everywhere to some degree, but you can catch a lot of those same fish with a plastic, you know, like a swim bait or like a minnow profile plastic, over there, you know, where maybe it's slightly dingier water or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of interesting and it's way different, right? Like if I, you know, go up to Rainy Lake, a lot of times I won't even bring, I shot a little video today on like my just one of those classic, like 5 summer presentations, you know, my top 5. And, it's just, I kind of did an honorable mention where it's like, hey, I didn't mention a paddle tail swim bait. But if I drove up to Rainy Lake tomorrow, I would have 3 of them tied up in different sizes and different colors. So it's not like, you know, don't get mad at me because I, you know, you cream them on lead core or spinner rigs or whatever. You know, that's just, it just is what it is. This is where I'm fishing and this is what I'm talking about. But if I went to the Dakotas, like, you know, I really don't troll a lot, but I think I would probably pull some spinners just for the fun of it, you know, cause that's sort of, obviously a pretty big deal over there, but yeah, use, you know, paddle tails and different things. So I don't know. It's just, everything is so different, you know, but I do think like I will watch to see what people in the Dakotas are doing and what people in Wisconsin are doing and what the Bassmaster scene is doing.
Oh, totally.
And all of the above, you know, even the crappie world, like there's just so many things you can watch and compare notes. And like the people who have a lot of perspective, or excuse me, the people who, how do I say this? The people who maybe could stand to learn a little bit more will probably say, oh, like their lakes are different than mine. That doesn't, you know, that's not me. But the people who are smart and, you know, willing to like dig a little bit can say, ooh, that's interesting that they're doing that there. Obviously the lakes are different, but what can I learn from them?
100%.
to implement or, you know, modify or implement, you know, so it's just different. So
the Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Well, you put that very well, very polite, I should say. I just could never, you know, watch a video or watch somebody better than me or listen to somebody better than me and not be like striving to like get those takeaways. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, if I walk away from a video and I get to the point where I'm so arrogant that, you know, I didn't get anything out of that video, like that's a problem. Those are those individuals that it's like, you know, now you gotta go have a heart to heart with yourself in the mirror and be like, man, I need to turn this around and I need to be more astute, because that's what the guys at the top are doing. Like, these guys, they shut their mouth and open their ears when fishing is being talked, you know, anywhere in like a good crowd. It's like, man, it's like, it's pretty unbelievable to see it in real time. Again, that's where I talk about like being involved in the industry was like, oh my gosh, I just thought these guys knew everything and that they couldn't, I mean, they learn every day. But getting back to sort of the beginning, we were talking about you're traveling around and, you know, some of the examples of like, if you want to build confidence in something, these are some good examples of where to go. And in light of that, like, I have a topic that I want to kind of discuss with you, or have you kind of share your experience with, because when I watch your content and you're, at least the last handful of years, I see you a lot, you know, you're up on your bow, forward sonar, jig presentation. And, especially like talking like that summer bite, you know, like the rainy lake stuff, you know, the suspended fish, but you definitely showcase fishing, utilizing forward sonar and fishing big areas.
Yeah.
You're not fishing spots on the spot. You're finding fish in ones and twos and you're roaming around and you've gotten to the point now where you feel like, it translates in your video. You're so comfortable cruising around in open water. It's almost like your emotions don't change at all when you see a big mark and you make a good cast or whatever. And it's like,
sure.
And it works or it doesn't work. And then you're on to the next thing. Like, you're almost gotten to the point now where it almost seems casual. And I was watching one of your videos earlier this year and it was like, I was watching you. This was one of my takeaways, and it had nothing to do with what you're talking about. But one of my big takeaways from you was like watching you fish that way. You're fishing big areas or you're just covering water and jig presentation, forward sonar, something that I'm super into right now in my own stuff.
Yeah.
You were so casual when like a fish didn't go and you'd like, you kind of went back to your boat, you grabbed another rod and you're like, well, maybe I'm going to try this, whatever. Myself in those moments, I'm not casual. I'm like, I get really, really beat up by these individual fish that won't go. Like, I get stuck on them. It's like each individual fish is such an opportunity to me that like, if I'm reflecting on myself correctly, like I'm still pretty inefficient that way because I get stuck on an individual fish. I'm trying to get better at fishing bigger areas. Don't let one fish, you know, bust me up so bad, and then just build confidence that another 40 yards or 50 yards or 100 yards down, there's going to be the next target, and you just got to be ready for that one. And by the end of the day, they kind of all add up. I just had this conversation recently with Joe Bricko.
Yeah,
from JT, talking about winning that Mille Lacs tournament, where these guys, they fish huge areas. And I'm envisioning, like, myself, like, I just don't know what it is. I don't know what I'm missing, but I do that a lot. I emulate what I'm hearing a lot. I can put my trolling motor on 10 and go fast. I can scan around. I can see a mark. I can catch it or not and keep going. But I still have those, like, emotional swings. I think they wear on me by the end of the day. And then, and I still have yet to, like, cover as much water as I hear people covering. And like, and so, yeah, it's like, I still feel like I just don't know exactly where I'm at in my journey there. I've had some wins, but I kind of want to hear your story in that, like where, what are some specific examples or outings in your recent past where you feel like, sort of describe where you built your confidence and how you fish these big areas, and you can let, you know, some of those negative fish roll off your back and go to the next one. You see where I'm going with this? Like, I kind of want you to give me like a little bit of a pep talk or a seminar on building confidence, fishing big areas.
Well, okay. So I think as far as just the mental, like the mental, I mean, do you think, like, how devastated do you think the Cleveland Browns are when they lose another football game, you know? Like, fishing around here, the fish are just so picky, and you cast in enough fish, you just get like a vibe for whether or not they're going to maybe pull the trigger. And you just learn real quick that, like, to identify when the fish isn't going to snap and just move on. And a lot of times, the only exception would be like if it's like a really, really, really big fish, you know, you might spend a little bit more time on it and try and, you know, pop a plastic or something in front of its face and, you know, try a jig crawler and then maybe as a last resort throw a bobber out there or something. But most of the time with these fish, like, they're pretty well burned on the first cast. I would say, like, the exception to that is, you know, sometimes you can just give them a little bit of a different look and they'll go. But casting angles are enormous. So if I feel like it's a good size fish, but maybe not like a trophy, and I feel like I made a really, really good cast where the casting angle was perfect, you know, I can read the body language of the fish and say, yeah, I mean, it saw me for sure, you know, but just the way it's moving, I don't know that it's, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily going to be an easy task to get it to bite. So that's part of it. And honestly, just the fishing is so tricky. Like, if we do a league tournament out on Gull Lake next week, you know, depending on how the bite is, Gull is either super good or the hardest lake you've ever fished before. And, you know, we'll throw at 100 fish in 3 hours and get like 3 bites, you know? It's like, so you're just, at some point you become a glutton for punishment, and just mentally you can handle getting denied. You know, if I was in a place where the fishing was really good, you know, if a fish didn't bite, I might be like, what the crap? Why didn't it bite? You know, but like sometimes I'll fish with some buddies, you know, maybe buddies who bass fish or whatever. And they'll be like, what the heck? That was a perfect cast. And it charged so fast. I can't believe it didn't bite. And I'm like, you can't believe it didn't bite? You know, we're walleye fishing, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think that's, part of that is just like we've got so used to playing a numbers game locally here that you know, you're just sort of used to, you have to move really quickly. And it's like, if you're going to spend, you know, you can dissect a little weed bed or something, but like a lot of the biggest fish are out suspended and you can see them really far away. So go as fast as humanly possible until you mark the fish 150 feet away, and then slow down, take your time, set up a good cast, make a good cast, you know, just execute well. And if they don't go, depending on what you see, either move on or, you know, take a slightly different approach. I definitely wouldn't suggest only throwing at each fish once. Cause oftentimes, you know, you might not have made as good of a cast as you thought you did, or the fish might not have seen it, or did see it, you know, but like, yeah, that would be, that'd be some of my thoughts. And, I haven't listened to that Bricko podcast. I definitely will. But I was talking
I think you'll like it, man. It's Joe's a stud, and he's like, he's willing to share.
Extremely successful in the tournament world too. But yeah, I mean, I was talking to TJ today, and he had listened to that podcast, and just talking about, just, he had mentioned that, you guys were talking about just like running and like really not spending any time on any fish unless it looks like a blimp, you know? So yeah, I mean, that's how you got to fish. If you want to catch the very biggest fish in X number of hours, you know, if that's a 3-hour derby, or if it's a, you know, 8-hour derby, 3-day derby, whatever, like putting it on 10 and just ripping around looking, until you see really big marks. And like, yeah, I mean, that's how I like to fish. We got, Jake Cahy fishes our local league, and he is like super, super good. You know, one of the best sticks in the NWT for sure. And, yeah, he's like, his trolling motor is like bent, like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you watch him drive around, it's like, he's going 5 or something, or, you know, just with his trolling motor. But you get to Lake of the Woods, and I don't know if Joe told you this or not, but a lot of those guys, you're using their outboard.
Yeah. You know? It's like their partner's on the console pushing them.
Yeah.
And they're just up there saying, it's like, whoa, dude. That's a lot.
Yeah. I don't know if I've done that before, you know, but that's not something I don't really talk about as much in a video. Cause it's like, you're starting to get into safety concerns for sure. When you're up on the front of the deck and there's 3-4 foot rollers or whatever, and you got the outboard trimmed down and you're, you know, just crashing into some waves, but you're moving quite a bit faster than if you're just using your trolling motor. And like places like Lake of the Woods are so enormous, like that, you know, it would be tricky to consistently do well out there unless you're out there every day, like guiding or something. It'd be hard to consistently do well if it was just you, you know. A lot of those guys, they'll have their team, they'll have 5 guys, 5 boats or whatever, and they'll all be driving around with their outboards, you know, scanning, looking quickly, and covering a lot of water until you find the area where the big girls are floating around. And then the team kind of goes over to that area and lights them up during the tournament, you know. But like, to go out there by yourself for a day and you're like, well, man, look at these weights, like 30 inch average, like what the heck. If you wanted to go out and do that by yourself, you're like, I'm going to go there, like, I feel like I'm kind of good at fishing, you know, I'm going to try and do that. It's just like, there's so much water to cover. If you look at how enormous Lake of the Woods is, and like, they're covering like a lot of it over 5-6 days of practice, 5 guys, outboards, forward facing, you know, scanning, moving quickly. It's just like a whole system, right? Systematic.
Yes. You got to be tuned into that. To have any expectation that you could emulate that, even in like a 3-day or a 4-day fishing trip, if you're by yourself, like, you have to be clued in to things. And even then, if your information is 3 days old,
yeah, them fish moved.
Like any of those big body of water, those fish have moved on. So yeah, it's like, realistically, yeah, like, you know, there's definitely, to do those things by yourself on those giant bodies of water, you got to be, you know, lucky enough for sure. Like, you definitely got to be lucky too, like, in all this. But you know, when you guys are out cruising this open water and you're on Rainy Lake or you're doing it around home, you know, in some of your smaller lake videos, like, you know, it just seems like it's, you know, it's kind of consistent, you know, you're just going and, you know, by the end of your video, some of your uncut videos is 3 hours. It's like, man, you're not turning around on like any fish, you know, like, oh, you turned around on one or two or whatever. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like, man, I make these fish divorce me before I divorce them. But what you're talking, if you can manage your emotions and man it, you know, keep yourself with a positive attitude, try to break up with them before they break up with you. If you get that inkling that it was a good cast and they reacted to your bait, but are definitely negative or almost certainly based on that body language, not going to bite. Like, don't give that fish the satisfaction of like another good cast. Save that good cast for like the next fish. Like, I think that could help me manage my emotions a little bit, because that's where I just get busted up so bad, man. And then at the end of the day, it's like, if I'm sharing that story with whoever, like Jason, you know, I'm always bouncing ideas off of him and we're always, you know, trying to get better together or whatever. And he helps me with so much, but it's like, man, when I say I casted at say 50 fish that didn't eat that day, you can translate that as like, I casted them to death. And then, you know, it's like, I know I gotta get over that. So I kind of like, I already know what my next steps need to be, but you know, hearing your experiences with it and just like what you get out of it, I think is, you know, I think that that stuff just kind of helps me get that in my head, like being more prepared for the next time, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's part of, it's fun doing some of like these uncut, no editing videos too, where like the camera just runs for 3 hours straight and you get to watch it. It's, you sort of just get like a little bit of a vibe as opposed to a highlight reel where,
oh yeah,
like here's what you can expect. Like, you know, this is... fish, walleyes usually don't bite, you know, typically they're not like willing to bite. So this is just kind of how it goes. I think people can get super jaded watching just a standard fishing video, which basically ends up being translated to a highlight reel of my day of fishing, you know, like I'll catch 3 or 4 fish in a video on like a normal video. Where it's cut, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And people will be like, oh my gosh, like that's sick. You know, it's like a 15-minute video and there's 4 fish and there's action. And it's like, wow. People are like, wow. And then I'll do like an uncut video with no editing, 2.5 hours, 2:15, whatever it is. And I'll catch like 10 on like, one of these local lakes, and there'll be like people in the comments that are like, oh man, like it's just awesome to see people struggling too, you know. This is real fishing.
Yeah, like, dude,
it's nice to see that it's not just hook sets left and right, you know, on a tough day like this. I'm like, I mean, I killed it.
Yeah, dude.
Like, if I was fishing a tournament, I would have won, you know? Like,
Central Minnesota, like summertime. And when you catch 4, 5, or 6 in the first, like, you know, hour and a half, I'm sitting there thinking, dude, that's the best 8-hour day I've ever had, like on my home lake back home in Otter Tail County where I grew up. Yeah. Like, I've never done, like, as good as you've done in 3 hours on some of those lakes where you're, and you know, you're not shying away from it. There's jet skis flying behind you in some of those videos and all that. And there's no doubt that there's boat pressure. You know, that was another comment that I didn't want to let completely go before the end of this. You know, you were talking earlier about, you know, like those, the popular lakes, like, and how these fish in clear water react. It's like, it's not just fishing pressure. Like we used to, or, you know, I just sort of digested a lot of anglers would talk about, like fishing pressure, where like the, you know, these fish are educated, or these fish that are getting pressure are tough on community spots, are tougher to get to eat than, you know, unpressured fish. But it's like, it's not how many lures have gone by their face. It's like boat pressure of any kind. So when you're in like that recreational stuff where up ahead of you a half a mile, you know, there's a bunch of jet skis flying around or boats are just like doing their deal, skiing around. By the time you get there, if they're gone, if there was fish under them, there was pressure happening.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting too. I think the boat pressure really matters for sure. But like another thing we've kind of learned too is I think sometimes it is negative and then other times it's almost positive at certain times of year. So it's kind of a weird one, right? But like heavily trafficked areas, which, you know, it kind of sucks to fish those areas because they're people always driving by, but sometimes those areas will hold fish as well, like pinch points where boats have to kind of go through. And I don't know if it's because it's a pinch point or what it is, you know, if they're there despite the boats running around. But it seems like some of those areas will hold a lot of fish and a lot of suspended fish. And I will say one thing I do know for sure is on some of these lakes, there's just like all these obnoxious boats driving around, you know, whether it's wake boats or whatever. And they, like, if you look on forward facing, they make an absolute ruckus underneath the surface. Like there is a vapor trail half a mile long and it goes down 10 feet. But one thing I know for sure is like muskies are like hunting that vapor trail. So that's what I've seen with forward facing is like, they'll be like tailing the boat, like 100 feet or 50 feet or sometimes like 30 feet, like underneath these boats. And I don't exactly know why, but I would assume maybe something to do with like, you know, bait getting disoriented from the prop wash, you know, like, but they will like hunt the prop wash. And yeah, like I'll see them underneath it. And yeah, like if I was targeting muskies a lot with forward facing, I would definitely be looking behind these boats. And I'm sure to some degree, I mean, the muskies are just super like tuned in on it. Yeah. And I think that's why like guys have traditionally done like trolling baits in the prop wash, you know, where they'll put like a down rod.
I've heard that. Like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Like they'll have boards, you know, where they'll have get baits out away from the boat and they'll be running, you know, like, but they, in their spread, they might have one out on either side and then they'll have one just going down the middle in the prop wash. And based on what I've seen, and I'm not going out and targeting muskies, but based on what I'd see, I bet you could catch, you know, more muskies than anything, just having one line, you know, 30 feet behind the boat. So it's just, it's interesting. And so I don't know if that matters with walleyes or not, but that's something we're just kind of learning more and more about here, you know, every year, every time you go out and you're watching and seeing what the fish are doing. And, you know, that's a developing thought that I've kind of chatted with buddies about.
I get, last thing I had written down, we'll make time for it. I know I appreciate your time, Nick, man. Had you on the line for a long time, but fun fishing, you know, it seems like the industry has kind of pinned you into the walleye lane, but I know you're a multi-species guy, dude. I know, you know, I got to imagine that you're doing some fishing, you know, behind the scenes, you know, when you don't have the cameras on and it's not suspended walleyes, what is it for you?
Sure. Yeah, no, I honestly, if I could go to more places and see suspended walleyes, I'd love that.
Come out to Sakakawea, man. We'll take you.
Yeah, I'd love to go to Sakakawea. I love to go to Fort Peck.
Oh yeah.
I was talking to Brett and he said like the winning team had like I think aim conversion, you know, length to weight, I think. But it was like a 14-pound average or something.
Oh yeah, yeah, on Tiber. Yeah, Tiber's the next one up above on the Missouri River just above Peck.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, that's a Cisco fishery. It's not nearly as big a water as Peck.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But that's good to hear, man. It's good to hear that, you know, we watch you catching suspended walleyes. We see you getting hyped about it. And it's like, man, what would you want to do in your free time? Catch more suspended walleyes. That's about as genuine and legit as you can get.
I should mention, like, my kids love to just cast plastics for bass. So I've got a son who's 12 and a daughter who's 8. And they both like to fish to some degree. Actually, my daughter is like pretty obsessed. My younger daughter. And but yeah, so like we'll cast from shore a lot for bass, and you know, walk up and down the shoreline, cast off the dock over at Granny's place. And so we do a lot of that, and sometimes we'll bring the boat out and just kind of fan cast weed lines. Actually, weed beds, I should say. I was out with my wife and two kids, and our kids last summer, and we were just kind of randomly fan casting, and my wife was just kind of hanging out, maybe helping a little bit with the kids, and she's like, you know what, I want to catch one. I was like, all right, let's see if we can pull out forward facing and just see one you can throw at. And I just kind of just scanned around. I was like, oh, there's one right there, 80 feet to our left, you know, just outside of where the kids were throwing. And it ended up being a 30-inch walleye. So just kind of fun to get out and fan cast and just, you know, what sort of wet a line, you know, bonus points if it's some crazy fish, but it's just fun to catch some stuff, and they just love it. So
that's awesome, man. Well, that's good to hear. I appreciate the updates, Nick, and we'll talk to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, take her easy. Thanks for reaching out. So